The Federal Reserve holds rates steady, but hints at a possible rate cut in the months ahead.
It's definitely clear that markets are overwhelmingly expecting the move to happen next month at the Fed's next meeting in July. That's also what economists surveyed by the Journal found.
Plus, a UN investigation calls for further scrutiny of Saudi Arabia's crown prince over the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And YouTube weighs big changes to kids' content. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Before we get to our story on the Fed's decision to hold rates steady, a move that sent U.S. stocks up this afternoon, here are some other top stories we're following today. A top investigator at the United Nations has released a report on the murder of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was killed in October at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Wall Street Journal reporter Jared Malson has more on the findings, which implicate Saudi Arabia's crown prince.
What's significant about this report is that it says that there's credible evidence that Mohammed bin Salman, who's the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, was personally involved in the killing, that the murder or the operation that resulted in his murder was planned and authorized at high levels of the Saudi government, and that after the fact there was, in effect, a cover-up that the crown prince would have been aware of. It talks about how, you know, days after the killing, they sent a cleaning crew to the Saudi consulate in Istanbul where Khashoggi was killed, and that was at a point where the crown prince had already said publicly that he was aware of the incident, that he was following closely what was going on, but, you know, by this time it had all spilled into the open. And so there's no way, the report says, that he would have been able to not be aware of that.
Malson says the report puts new pressure on the Saudi government.
It's really the first time that all of the evidence, including the audio recordings from inside the Saudi consulate that the Turkish government has, along with all the other evidence and the publicly available information, has all been put in one place and collated and analyzed. And so it's going to put the murder back onto the agenda. It's going to put more pressure on the Saudi government at a time when they're really trying to turn a page on this whole incident.
Saudi Arabia's Minister of State for Foreign Affairs has rejected the report's findings. The Environmental Protection Agency has overturned rules for power plants set under the Obama administration and announced a new plan that it says will cut emissions 35% from 2005 levels by 2030. EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler says that'll keep power costs more affordable. But environmentalists say the new plan, which would limit the EPA's ability to mandate tougher regulations, doesn't go far enough. They say that's because plants had already cut their carbon dioxide emissions by 25% between 2005 and 2016. International investigators have charged four suspects, three Russians and one Ukrainian, with murder in connection with the downing of a passenger jet over Ukraine in 2014. All 298 people aboard Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 were killed. Investigators say the suspects are unlikely to stand trial. They're either in Russia or part of eastern Ukraine, not controlled by Kiev. The Russian Foreign Ministry said Wednesday that accusations of Russian involvement in the incident were unfounded. This week, Iran said it would breach international limits set on its uranium stockpiles. That's after the U.S. blamed Iran for attacks on oil tankers in the Persian Gulf, a claim Iran denies. As tensions between the U.S. and Iran remain high, Wall Street Journal Executive Washington editor Jerry Seib explains how Iran is trying to drive a wedge between the U.S. and Europe, Japan, and China.
Iran knows very well that Japan and China are very dependent on oil from the Persian Gulf. So attacks on tankers are designed to signal to Tokyo and Beijing that their access to oil from the Persian Gulf could be jeopardized by Iran if it wants to do that. And at the same time, the Iranians know that European leaders, particularly in Britain, France, and Germany, are very interested in seeing the nuclear deal struck a few years ago stay in place. Those leaders, after all, helped negotiate the deal alongside the U.S. They think it's very important for international peace and stability. So by saying that it is prepared to break some of the limits in that agreement, the Iranians are signaling that the whole deal may be in jeopardy. Why do the Iranians want to send these signals to Europe and to Japan and China? Well, because they want those countries to step in and provide some economic relief to Iran that will help ease some of the burdens that they're feeling right now because of sanctions from the U.S.
For more, check out the video on our website at wsj.com/video. The Federal Reserve held rates steady, but Fed Chair Jerome Powell says uncertainties have increased as the U.S. economy continues to expand.
We want to see and we want to react to developments trends that are sustained, that are genuine, and not react just to data points or just to changes in sentiment, which can be volatile. At the same time, we're quite mindful of the risks to the outlook and are prepared to move and use our tools as needed to sustain the expansion.
The Fed also signaled that a rate cut could be on the horizon in the months ahead. Joining me now from Washington with more on the Fed's decision is Wall Street Journal reporter Kate Davidson. Kate, it wasn't exactly surprising that the Fed decided to hold rates steady this time around, but we did hear from Chairman Powell that there is a strengthened case for a rate cut in the months ahead. Any more clues on when that might be?
Well, I'm not sure if Chairman Powell gave any firm clues, but it's definitely clear that markets are overwhelmingly expecting the move to happen next month at the Fed's next meeting in July. That's also what economists surveyed by the Journal found. In our monthly survey that we put out, a lot of them had shifted their forecast. Most now expect a rate cut sometime this year, and a lot of them are expecting it in July or possibly in September.
Powell also mentioned some mainstays that we often talk about on the Fed's plate when they're weighing policy decisions, namely concerns about slowing global growth and ongoing uncertainty over trade. What did he have to say about those factors?
Right. Well, it sounded like on the trade front in particular that was continuing, as you said, continuing to weigh on their minds, perhaps more so, and that the possible risks had grown, risks to their outlook because of these trade tensions. So it seems as though as they're continuing to look at whether they need to cut or hold rates steady, it depends largely on that trade picture. Now, he was asked explicitly, I thought it was a good question, if there is a trade deal with China, does that take the possibility or the need for a rate cut off the table? And basically, Chairman Powell said no, not necessarily. We look at a number of factors. Incoming data, U.S. economic data, has been actually fairly strong for the consumer. It's one thing that we could take into account, but it's not the only thing. So I think that if you were an investor, just a Fed watcher, and before we get to that July meeting, there is some kind of trade agreement. That doesn't mean, the Fed is back to its wait-and-see, on-hold stance.
The Fed has also, of course, been the subject of frequent criticism from the president, and the Wall Street Journal reported this week on the suggestion that President Trump could demote Powell. That was something the White House denied, but we also heard Powell fire back against that idea during the press conference today.
Right. I mean, the Journal, we had actually even heard some of this back in December after the Fed raised rates that month, that the president was asking some of his aides, is this something, can I fire him? And it came up again this week. There were reports that he'd actually gone so far as to ask the White House legal counsel to look into this. And our understanding at the time, and then again this week, is that they ruled that pretty much no, that's not something that he can do. But yes, it was interesting today. Chairman Powell got a couple of questions about this. He was asked directly, what would you say if the president called you up or even just tweeted that he wanted to demote you? And he was pretty clear. He said, I'm here serving a four-year term and I intend to serve out that term. He was also asked, is there a point at which you feel that to protect the institution, you need to push back on some of this criticism from the president? And he didn't take the bait on that question, basically said, I don't discuss elected officials. We're very committed to our independence. And we think that it's best for the economy and best for the Fed if we make our decisions based on incoming data rather than political considerations, which is fairly consistent with what he's been saying for many months now.
And finally, Kate, we've been watching the market reaction to the Fed's decision, which sent stocks up.
This was a very careful line to walk, a very small needle to thread, if you will. I think that markets seemed generally okay with Chairman Powell. He needed to come out. If the Fed wasn't cutting rates, I think that the goal for the Fed was to signal perhaps that they might be open to take more of a dovish stance and be responsive. Back in December, there was perhaps what some saw as a misstep in how Chairman Powell handled that. The Fed had downgraded their forecast for rate cuts, but they still increased for 2019, but they raised rates at the time. And I think that made markets very nervous this time. Although the Fed didn't cut rates, there was a strong signal that they are paying very close attention. They're willing to do what they need to do to respond to a slowdown in economic growth, to sustain the expansion, as Chairman Powell has said. And it seemed like the markets generally heard him and perhaps understood that and weren't too nervous about those remarks.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Kate Davidson joining us from Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you.
Now on to social media. YouTube is weighing big changes to its content for kids. My colleague Kim Gittleson spoke with the Journal's Rob Copeland for more details.
The big question here is, what have sources told you YouTube is thinking of doing when it comes to children's content?
Well, YouTube is in one of its biggest crises in years. It really can't stop lurching from one scandal to another. And the most recent problem has been the dangerous content that it's surfing to children, particularly those under the age of 13. So to get around that, executives inside YouTube are debating moving huge amounts of children's content to a separate app, the YouTube Kids app, which they hope will inoculate them from criticism that children start on, say, a cartoon and are then automatically shifted into, say, more risque content.
And now, why might this be something that YouTube doesn't want to do? You write in your article, for instance, that children's programming is quite lucrative for the company.
Well, no website, no application, no one in Silicon Valley wants people to spend less time using their product. And YouTube has been fantastically successful. Users watch more than 1 billion hours of content a day. So anything that disrupts that relationship between YouTube and the user, in this case, even a child, is really dangerous for advertising.
Can you talk to me a little bit more about some of the problems that people have highlighted when it comes to children's content on YouTube as it currently stands? What are some of the issues that you might encounter if, say, your five-year-old ends up on YouTube, a very technologically savvy five-year-old ends up on YouTube and starts watching?
Sure. So one of the secret sauces of YouTube that really isn't so secret at all is that you start watching one video and it automatically keeps playing others. You don't have to select the next video. So a huge problem for YouTube has been that children start watching, say, a cartoon that their parents selected, and their parents walk out of the room and the kids just keep watching. And eventually, at best, you wind up with a movie trailer that you didn't want your four-year-old to see. And at worst, you can wind up with them seeing profanity or something with violence.
For more on this story, head to our website, WSJ.com. We'd also like to hear from you. What protections do you think children need with online video? Let us know with a comment on our website or by emailing us at whatsnews@WSJ.com. And that's What's News for this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.